This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also check out our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about one of the best stories in the NHL this season, we're pleased to be joined by Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets analyst. Jody, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Jody. Obviously, as I mentioned, the Blue Jackets, you know, we know what the offseason was like, losing Bobrovsky, losing Panarin. We know the injuries. I mean, the list of injuries and regulars that is without, that this team is without would humble most every other team. And yet, as we sit here with 14 games to go in the end, in the regular season, the Blue Jackets occupy the first wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Is this one of the most masterful coaching jobs you've ever seen from Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella?
You know what? I really think it is. And I think this is right in his wheelhouse. He's, the narrative coming into the season. Well, let's go back to last season when in the first round of the playoffs when the Blue Jackets swept the Lightning. You know, not a word was spoken about the Blue Jackets, and he used that as ammo to go into the locker room and tell the guys, hey, no respect. No one's talking about you guys. They've all got you written off. You're playing the guy. Just give the Lightning the cup. It's over. And he turned that into a motivator, and they went on and swept that series, obviously. And then this year, exactly what you just said. No Panarin, no Bobrovsky. Duchene's not back. Poor Blue Jackets. He took that, and he turned it around. And you know what's remarkable is people forget. There's a great young core here that have been together for 4 or 5 years, and they understand John Tortorella hockey. They understand the brand they need to play. And I'm talking about guys like Cam Atkinson, who's out, you just mentioned, Seth Jones, who was out. But then you go Nick Foligno, Pierre-Luc Dubois. There's some really high-end leadership and talent here that is young and been together a while. So, you know, and then you add the injuries, and again, it's like the players – at game time, when you're a player, at game time, you don't look around and be like, oh, we're done. Maybe on the way to the rink, you're like, oh, I can't believe another guy is out. Are we going to be able to beat the Washington Capitals tonight? And when you put the skates on, you just play a certain brand of hockey. So the coaching has been, it's been amazing how Torts has kept them. There's been no talk of any player out, and they've just been focused on the singular game at hand, and they've done well. Now, are the injuries catching up? Yes. Let's be honest. There's a lack of skill in the lineup. They can hang around and give themselves a chance to win every game, but they've lost a few points here lately due to lack of talent, the talent that's out of the lineup.
Jody, we got to talk about the goaltending because, as you know, Sergei Bobrovsky leaves Columbus and all of the talk was, well, Columbus's goaltending isn't going to be as good as it was last year. And then you have Elvis Merlikins and, you know, the talk with Merzlikins before he went down was, you know, this guy should be up for, you know, the Calder Trophy. He's injured right now. And obviously, Jonas Korpisalo has taken over. And with the exception of, you know, one or two bad starts, he's been excellent lately. So how have the Columbus Blue Jackets been able to still have goaltending be a strength when you're losing a former Vezina Trophy winner in Sergei Bobrovsky?
Well, if we take a look at what Barry Trotz did with the New York Islanders a couple of years ago, you know, Thomas Greiss was never a starter in the National Hockey League. And he's a guy that became a valuable part of that system. So it's a six-man system. And the goalie, and it's remarkable that the conversation that Torts had with Merzlikins, he couldn't stop a puck when he was a backup goalie. And, you know, athletes need to feel important. They need to feel, they need to be able to be the important one on the team or the important piece of the team. And that's where they, you know, they're A personalities that need that. And when Merzlikins went in the net, he wanted to be the man. And he wanted to be the hero for the Blue Jackets when Korpisalo got hurt. And Torts grabbed him and said, listen, because remember in Winnipeg when he played that puck up the middle of the ice? Mm-hmm. He was a backup goalie. I think it was a tie game. He gave the game away. He threw it up the middle of the ice late in the game, and Torts grabbed him and said, listen, you don't have to be a hero on this team. You need to give us a chance to win and stop the puck when it's your time. And that's the mentality of the goalies. Defensive structure around them has been lights out. And they're very stingy. There's no real grade A chances, almost zero rebound chances. So they play a brand of hockey where it's five guys locked in around the crease, always support around the puck, and their focus is exiting the zone. And that is easy for the goalies. It's predictable, you know, and there's no, you don't see the, now they have given up a lot of odd man rushes lately. Seth Jones is a massive hole for this team, but still the mentality, you'll see it tonight for 90% or 95% of the game, they'll be stingy and hard to play against, and that's what's helped the goaltending.
Jody, I just wanted to ask you quickly, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but how quickly is Merzlikin, to coming back to the lineup? I believe he is traveling with the team, but is he close to coming back, or do we not know right now?
He might be back tonight. We're in this front end of a back-to-back. Tomorrow night's Vancouver. You'll see him tonight or tomorrow.
You know, Jody, we're contractually obligated, being a Manitoba-based show, to ask about anybody who's got a Manitoba connection. And, of course, Pierre-Luc Dubois' dad, Eric, is a coach with the Manitoba Moose, or assistant coach with the Manitoba Moose, I should say. So we're going to ask about Pierre-Luc Dubois. How is he doing in his third season with the Columbus Blue Jackets? He looks like he's, again, on pace for his third 20-goal season. So how would you evaluate him so far this year?
You know what? It's a great question, and it's fascinating to watch. When you just watch him play, you think, oh, no, he's a good player. But him and John Tortorella are going through kind of a teacher and a student moment. And it's been going on now for about probably 2 months. Pierre-Luc Dubois, he's had some success in his first 2 years in the National Hockey League. And he's a guy that is very emotional, and he wants to be the man. He wants to be the number one guy in the power play. He wants to be on the top line. I mean, and he played with Panarin last year and did that and had success. But Torts is a coach that explains and demands for you to earn it today. What you did yesterday is great, and it'll help you for today, but you got to earn it again today. And there's moments where Dubois has dipped a little bit. Listen, he is 21 years old. He's built like a swimmer. He's got a big back. He's strong on the puck. He's a coach's son, like you just said. Like, he's got the drive. He's got a knack. He understands the game. He's a highly thinking, highly skilled player, but... And he could dominate a shift. I honestly think he could change a game in a shift. He's that type of player. But he gets away from it a little bit. He waits to come to him too much. And that is not what Torts sees in him. Torts sees him a power forward with skill that can be elite in this league. So there's a give and take there. And there's been a lot of moments where you don't see Dubois in certain situations, or Dubois isn't on the bench, not too happy with himself. That's an advantage of me being at ice level. I see these moments. Mm-hmm. So he's growing. But right now he's going through a few things. Now, the last couple of games, you've seen a couple breakout moments, but not consistent with how dominant he could be.
Jody Shelley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jody is an analyst on Columbus Blue Jackets broadcast. The Blue Jackets in the fight for their playoff lives in the Eastern Conference wildcard race with the Islanders and the Rangers and the Hurricanes, and I guess to a little bit of a lesser extent, the Florida Panthers. Jody, with those four, five teams, you know, battling neck and neck, what from your perspective is going to be the difference? What's going to be the difference for the team that makes the playoffs versus the team that doesn't?
Well, it's tough to say. I mean, we all know the game tightens up this time of year, and I think just stubbornness and consistency to play your system is going to be the difference. I mean, one advantage I think the Blue Jackets have is they know what they are. With through all the injuries and testing the depth, they understand how they have to play to win. So there's moments where, for example, Tampa's got the skill, and they wanna, they always try to make the lateral pass because they can. Well, the Blue Jackets understand that if they keep it tight and they shut those down, they'll frustrate the opponent. So the Blue Jackets understand they're a team like that'll hold structure and then attack. And I think that's the key. I think a lot of these teams that have success right now, they understand where their strength is, whether it's the power play, whether it's goaltending, whether it's the penalty kill or the elite players being the best. I think the teams that identify exactly what they are and how they play are going to have success. And they're the teams that have runs this year and have dipped. And, you know, some teams have peaked maybe a little too early. I look at the Flyers. Are they peaking too early? Do they really know what they are? You know, they have players stepping up at key moments, doing great things. They're on a heck of a run. But the teams that are just methodical and understand their system I think that's going to be the difference here at the end.
Jody, we have to talk about Zach Werenski, because when you look at the goal leaders amongst defensemen, he's right at the top. He's at 20 goals, and you know he's only in his fourth full-time year in the NHL, and you've covered this team for a long time. I mean, just how good can Werenski be? Because you forget he's only 22.
Yeah, he's special. He changed this organization when he came in 4 years ago, and he's that. He can exit the zone. He's so good at that. He's got his head up all the time. He plays big minutes. He's got the offensive knack. He actually told us about a month ago that he spends time with a goal-scoring coach in the offseason and just splitting up the zone in the offensive zone into six or seven different scoring areas where he knows if he gets the puck on the top of the circle in the dot lane, he knows exactly where he's going to shoot the puck, and he practices that shot, understanding that he wants to be an offensive guy. You know, he had shoulder problem a couple of years ago. He went through the off season with just rehabbing. And when you think about that, you know, players get better in the off season. They get stronger. They work on their game. And he couldn't do that a couple of years ago. And last year he came in, he was very frustrated because Torts went from saying, you're a rover, go, 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 to being, like, challenging his defensive play. And that really, you know, kind of mixed up Zach Werenski in his mind. But this year he's back to just playing hockey. Almost like he said, just forget it. I'm going to play. I'm not going to think. Started the offensive zone, and that's why he's having success. He knows when to go. He's one of those players that will just appear in the right spot, and it's fascinating to watch that. Your last question about what's going to be the difference. I mean, the methodical in the system is one thing, but you've got to have the skill too, and I think more players like Zach Werenski, when you play your system and you have a player like Zach Werenski, that's the difference maker inside the system, and that's what the Blue Jackets have in him.
The playoffs begin 1 month from tomorrow. Will the Blue Jackets be one of those teams? We'll know in the next 3 or so weeks.
It'll I hope so.
Fascinating race for the final playoff spots in the Eastern Conference. Jody Shelley covers the Blue Jackets as an analyst on their broadcast. Jody, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
Likewise, Jody.
You too, Jody.
Thanks so much. Quick note, it's being reported by Pekka Jalonen, a friend of ours who covers the world of hockey in Finland, that the World Women's Hockey Championships, which were set to be played in Truro and Halifax, Nova Scotia, have been canceled because of the coronavirus. So that is being reported by Pekka Jalonen, Finnish hockey writer, that the Women's World Ice Hockey Championships in Halifax and Truro, which were set to begin, I believe, this month or next month, if I'm not mistaken, have been canceled. So, of course, more on that as developments warrant. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we look more at the Eastern Conference playoff race. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I thought at the beginning of the third period we were dead on with it, but we need to turn that into having the puck more and forechecking and just developing some offense. We can't spend that much time in what I thought we played a pretty good defensive game, but then just stuck in our end zone at times and not wearing them down because we just didn't spend enough time after the first period.
Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella lamenting his team's lack of offense.
Is he answering your question about how many assistant coaches he had on the bench?
No, he wasn't. But he was talking about the team's lack of offense after their loss to Calgary earlier this week. They're up 2-0 against the Flames in Calgary. Gave up 3 goals, including the overtime winner, in the last 10 minutes of regulation. A hard loss for the Blue Jackets.
How do you give up a goal?
You know what I mean. Be quiet. You know what I mean. Be quiet. Don't even start. But you should start listening. You can continue listening to us and turn on TSN1 right now. I believe it's also on TSN3. I'm not 100% sure. We got it on
Mikey
one
McEwen
here in the studio. Yeah. The tiebreaker at the Briar is coming down to the final shots for the Skips in the 10th end. Mike McEwen is lying. It looks like he's lying too, trailing by two with the hammer. So TSN, your local TSN station, turn it on right now.
What that means.
Well, I know what it means. Don't worry about it, Dave. I got the curling updates here covered on the show.
I got kicked out of curling in high school.
Why? What'd you do?
I may or may not have dropped the rock on the ice, and they asked me to leave.
Did you do it on purpose?
No.
I don't know what you were in high school.
I was probably just horsing around, but you know, and I was taking it a little casually. I think it was out in West St. Paul.
Did you have the proper footwear on?
I don't remember, actually. It's a good question. Well,
footwear was the least of his problems if he was dropping the rocks on the ice.
As let's put it this way, I had the proper footwear to leave the place.
This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, two shows. Get your tickets to see Sean LeCumber before they're all sold out. Tickets available at RumorsComedyClub.com.
I've seen Sean LeCumber stand up. Very funny.
Very funny indeed. Yep. Exactly. So get your tickets at RumorsComedyClub.com.
That website, again, is RumorsComedyClub.com.
Let's ask this question. So the Eastern Conference playoff race is just as tight as the Western Conference playoff race.
Heating up, Drew.
Yeah. Who are your favorites? Who do you think is going to sneak in there? The Blue Jackets and the Islanders currently occupy the two spots. The Rangers are 2 points behind the Islanders. The Islanders have a game in hand. And then the Carolina Hurricanes are 3 points back, and they have multiple games in hand. Who do you think is going to squeak it out from the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't have the answer, just like we don't have the answer in the Western Conference, because none of these teams have really separated themselves. Like, the Rangers, to me, are the best story. So there's kind of that underdog in me that wants the Rangers to get in, just because we know what they did at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Chris Kreider, right? And Chris Kreider's injured.
Yeah, out of their lineup, he broke his foot.
Right,
fractured his foot.
But the fact that, you know, they went on this run here and they're relevant is really remarkable, because Artemi Panarin's had a great year. You know, we mentioned Kreider's had a great year. Mika Zibanejad, Mr. 5 goals in 1 game. He's obviously had a good year as well, even though
that game wasn't on TSN.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just incredible, because we haven't seen that since Patty Laine, 2018 in St. Louis, right? Was that 2018?
Yep.
Yeah, that was 2018. It was Hart's wedding. I should know that. So our good friend Hart. So when you're talking about the Rangers, I like that storyline. And, you know, you look at these other teams, you know, the Islanders, the Blue Jackets, the Hurricanes. Like, the Hurricanes have only won 3 games in their last 10. The Islanders have won 2 games in their last 10. Obviously, you know, they're getting some points here, and that's what really has kept Columbus, you know, right up there in a wild card spot, is that they're getting those loser points, losing in overtime and the shootout. So, you know, I'd have to look at the schedules, but even if you look at the schedules, you know, we talked about this in the Western Conference segment. I mean, even if one team has the harder schedule, I mean, Columbus has, who do they have? Vancouver and Edmonton coming up, right, this weekend back to back. You know, I mean, those are not easy games, because you're playing two teams that are battling for second place in the Pacific. They're just battling for a playoff spot, right? So when you're talking about this Eastern Conference, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, guys, because, you know, Florida is still in it. I mean, Florida's only 4 points back. I mean, obviously, Florida, you know, has one more game played than the New York Islanders, but I'm not ready to completely rule Florida out of it. Are you?
Yeah, I am. Have you seen how they've played since the player break? I mean, they just haven't been competitive. I mean, they you know, the frustration is seeping in. You hear it in Sasha Barkov's comments after their loss against Boston earlier this week. They lost to Boston in overtime. He talks about their lack of goal scoring. They just seem to be in disarray right now, the Panthers are. I have no reason to believe that they're going to all of a sudden flip that switch. I mean, Toronto's certainly doing their part to keep the Panthers in it for that third spot in the Eastern Conference, in the Atlantic Division, with Toronto losing back-to-back against Anaheim and Los Angeles. But Florida has refused to take advantage of the Maple Leafs' inconsistencies, to be polite.
Well, yeah, and I don't think, sorry, Dave, I was just going to say, I don't think, you know, any of these teams have really taken advantage of the opportunities in front of them. Like, we're talking about the Islanders, the Hurricanes, and the Blue Jackets. None of these teams have winning records in their last 10 games.
And I think that's the key, and that's what I was going to focus on as well, is that none of these teams are rising to the occasion, right? I mean, like you, as he illustrated, the Islanders are 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. I mean, here's an opportunity when the teams around you aren't playing well. Columbus, 2-4-4. You know? So, I mean, you've got to take advantage of this. And the problem is, none of these teams are. Carolina, 3-5-2. So you've literally got all the, and, you know, you guys have already talked about Florida. So the only team that currently is riding anything resembling a positive streak is the Rangers at 6-4-0. So, I mean, to me, the Rangers are carrying that momentum. You know, and Carolina's got a plus 21 goal differential. The Rangers have a plus 13. Columbus is the only team, I think, in their conference in the Metro that has a negative goal differential that's currently in a playoff spot. But
you know, Dave, just quickly, sorry, I pulled up Florida's schedule. They've got Montreal tonight, and then you've got St. Louis and Dallas after that. But then you've got New Jersey, Detroit. Then they're actually in Winnipeg. Then you've got Buffalo, like you've got Ottawa, you've got Montreal. Like, I'm just saying, I haven't compared schedules, but I mean, like, when you're talking about, you know, Detroit, Ottawa,
I think you have to pick the team that's playing the best hockey, and that's the Rangers, and they're going to get Shesterkin back.
Yeah,
you know, he was injured in that car accident. Him and Buchnevich were injured in that car accident. He's going to be back in the Rangers net, so he's getting healthy again. Now you lose Kreider, which certainly hurts, but you have a guy like Zibanejad who's having. You know, if Zibanejad hadn't been injured this season.
Yeah, his season would be unbelievable.
I
think he's still like, what, 16th in scoring or something like that?
His goal scoring numbers have been incredible. I mean, that's even before the 5-goal game against the Caps. He's been very good. You know, to me, it's the Rangers. You know, the way they've been playing, why not keep it going? It's not like the...
they're obviously going to try to keep it going.
I know, but why bet against them is what I'm saying. I don't have any reason
to bet
against them.
We're not talking about betting, but we're talking about... Well, I mean, sure, Drew, if you base it on what's happening lately, yes.
They're just as talented as the teams that they're chasing, if not more talented, I would argue. I mean, Carolina's back end is...
But again, you have to play the games, and you know, it's really close right now. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I wouldn't... you know, say with confidence, it's for sure going to be the Rangers.
No, of course not. There's no for sure. There's never any for sure's. But if I had to circle one team in the Eastern Conference playoff race and say, that's the team that I think is going to come out or is going to come out of this logjam and end up being a playoff team, to me, it would be the New York Rangers.
That's possible. They've got the Devils tonight, and then you've got Dallas and Colorado back-to-back.
Not easy.
That's on the road.
Yeah, of course, not
easy.
And you've
got Arizona on the road, and you also have a couple games against Pittsburgh coming up. You've got Washington, Tampa Bay, but you also have Columbus and Buffalo in there, so those teams aren't as good. But I mean, it's probably going to come down right to the wire. That's all I'm saying. I just think it's going to be very close. I don't necessarily know that, you know, the Rangers are going to win 5 or 6 games in a row and separate themselves from the rest of the pack. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not going to argue with you. They probably are the favorite. I mean, why would the Islanders or the Rangers, the Hurricanes, be the favorite with the way they've played lately? They've been under 500.
An update from the Brier, Mike McEwen, his final shot. He needed to play a run back double. For the win, he just missed the shot. Unfortunately, Mike McEwen's Brier hopes come to an end. The tiebreakers continue as Ontario moves on to face Northern Ontario for the right to play Newfoundland and Labrador in the 3-4 game later on today. Complete coverage available, of course, on TSN television. When we come back, what are we doing when we come back? Are we talking about the goal scoring? Is that what we're doing?
Race for the Rocket.
That's what we're doing. It's a crazy race for the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy. Pasternak, Ovechkin, Matthews, Dreisaitl, they're all neck and neck for the right to win the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Beach Panarin for the shot.
Not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 goals for Mika Zibanejad on Thursday night against the Washington Capitals, propelling the Rangers to a much-needed victory in their race for the final Eastern Conference playoff spots. Move over, Patrick Laine. There's a new 5-goal scorer in town.
Got to give a shout-out to Sam Rosen's call. Yeah. I love listening to Sam Rosen call Rangers games. He's so good. He's been doing it for so long, and he's just got such a unique call over there in New York. So he did a great job quantifying all those Zibanejad goals. So it was a real nice call.
It's looking, I don't know if it's likely necessarily, but it's very close to likely that for the first time since 2005-2006, there's going to be 4 or more players to score 50 goals this year in the NHL. Back in 2005-06, it was Jonathan Chichu, Jaromir Jagr, Alex Ovechkin, of course, Ilya Kovalchuk, and Danny Heatley. Shout out to you, Ezzy, for providing me with that information, of course.
Well, I had to go back and look because, you know, it's been a long time since you've had this many guys on the cusp of 50 goals, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing for the game. And I think it should be talked about more because right now, you know, we're talking about, you know, the Eastern Conference playoff race last segment and of course the Western Conference playoff race. But like right now, I mean, Washington has one game in hand on Boston, and just because Ovechkin's won the Rocket Richard so many times, you know, maybe you give him a little bit of an edge. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you wouldn't want to bet against Pastrnak either.
David Pastrnak and Alex Ovechkin are tied for the goal-scoring lead in the NHL with 47 goals right behind them. And I'm going to say a little bit quietly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Auston Matthews has 46 goals this year.
Which is shocking that anything Toronto-related would be quiet.
That's right. And I think it just goes to show you how big of a, you know, how much of a mess the Leaf season has been, despite the fact that they're in a playoff spot, that Matthews has got 79 points. He's having a great season.
Yep.
And nobody's talking about the fact he's got 46 goals this year.
Right. And Toronto's played two more games than Washington. So obviously, yes. I mean, that's not everything. But, you know, we might as well just throw that in there that, you know, Ovechkin does have the luxury of having more games.
Sure. And Ovechkin, if you remember, skipped the All-Star game. So he had to also sit out a game. So he's only played, he's played the fewest number of games. Dreisaitl's 3 goals behind with 43 goals, and then, you know, not quite in the same group, but if he gets 5 goals a game, he clearly will be. Mika Zibanejad fifth with 38 goals, and then the Winnipeg Jets' own Kyle Connor tied for sixth with Sebastian Aho of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's got 36 goals as well. So it's going to be a fascinating race to who's going to win the Rocket Richard Trophy over the final, you know, 3 weeks to a month of the NHL season here.
Yeah, I don't think Ovechkin's going to catch Phil Esposito, but he's definitely going to pass Mike Gartner for seventh all-time in goals. And it's just incredible, right? Like, he's passed Mark Messier this year. Mm-hmm. He's passed Steve Yzerman. He's passed Mario Lemieux, Teemu Selanne. Like, just incredible. Ovechkin's career going year by year and the amount of years he's led the NHL in goals, I mean, we talked about it. It goes back to 2005, 2006, right? The year after that full-year lockout. So, I mean, David Pastrnak is the guy that's jumped into that upper echelon. But if you look at last year and the games he missed, I mean, he was on, I think it was a 45-goal pace, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, Pastrnak winning it would be incredible because if you look at the list of Rocket Richard winners, it's basically Ovechkin, 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 right? So, it's just been an incredible year, and you know, Kyle Connor, he's easily going to hit 40 goals now.
Has this been one of the best goal scoring years of recent memory, Dave?
I mean, it seems that way. I mean, anytime you have guys hitting the 100 plus, are you talking about points or just
goals?
Oh, goals.
About goals. I mean, points. Well, yeah. I mean Dreisaitl, and we know what Dreisaitl and McDavid are doing.
Yeah.
Well, Dreisaitl's the guy that you didn't mention there, I don't think, right?
I did mention him in terms of the goals, yeah, but I sort of glossed over him.
Like, he's going to score.
He had 4 goals and an assist earlier this week.
He's at what, 42?
43 goals, right. 67 points, 67 assists for 110 points.
Right. So there's a chance that he scores, you know, 48, 49, 50 goals, and he ends up finishing fourth in goals.
It might be. He's going to win the Art Ross.
Yeah. I mean, look, the reality is, and as he pointed out, I mean, obviously there hasn't been this many 50-goal scorers or potentially this many 50-goal scorers in quite some time. And I think...
15 years.
I think... Thank you, Drew, for quantifying it.
You're right.
But the point is that it's been quite a number of years. Mm-hmm. And it's something that the NHL needs. It's goal scoring is what sells. It's what's sexy. It's what gets fans out of their seats. That and fighting, but specifically the goal scoring. I mean, I think it's always been good for the game. I think that, you know, fans love that kind of stuff. And I just want to touch on something with Ovechkin, because I remember 2016-17 when he had 33, and we talked about on this show, well, is this kind of what Alex Ovechkin is going to become? Will he ever be able to get back that lofty, or is this more what we're going to see? And then what did he get? 49, 51. And now he's got 47.
It's good to be the great eighth, is what you're saying there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just, it's to Ezzy's point, it's just of what he's been able to accomplish and how it's just, you know, the fact that he was on that list 15 years ago and he's still on the list, producing the way he does, it's just a remarkable testament to a goal scorer.
You know, I think we should also be talking about whether or not we're going to have 260 goal scorers this year, because I don't think it's ridiculous to think. I mean, I think a case could be made that Ovechkin and Pastrnak easily hit, you know, mid-50s. But, you know, just looking at Washington's schedule towards the end of the month.
That would be for Ovechkin and Pastrnak to get to 60 goals. It's going to take 13 goals in their last 14 and 50. It's basically a goal game from here on out.
Sure, which is obviously, I mean, that's far-fetched, but it's not impossible.
Don't we call that the Kyle Connor?
Well, as of late, he's been putting up those kind of numbers.
It's possible, right? And, you know, just looking, I was going to just quickly throw this out there. You know, if you look at Washington's schedule towards the end of the month, you've got Anaheim, L.A., San Jose, Detroit, Ottawa.
Well,
so all I'm saying is
not juggernauts is what you're saying.
Ovechkin could absolutely light it up against some of those bottom feeding teams at the end of the month.
And I think what's helping in this race is that these teams can't afford to necessarily take a night off, because Washington is tied with Philadelphia for the top spot in the Metropolitan Division. You know, Boston can afford to probably rest their guys down the stretch. You know, they have a 9-point lead on Tampa Bay. Boston's going to win at the Atlantic. Whether or not they choose to use that, I don't know. I mean, at most, they're going to take what? The last game of the regular season off, maybe the last two games of the regular season off. It's not like they're going to sit Pasternak for, you know, for 8 of the last 14 games that they're going to play. And they've scored at will, it seems, all season long. I mean, the word slump has never factored into the discussion when you talk about the seasons that Pasternak have been having, or that Ovechkin's been having. I mean, Dreisaitl has been unbelievable this year. You know, we talked 4 goals and an assist, and how quickly he was overshadowed by Zibanejad. Zibanejad, by the way, had he been healthy this season, is on an absolutely torrid pace in terms of his goal scoring. I mean, he was injured. He started off as a house on fire. Then he got injured for a lot of games. He's got 38 goals in 54 games played. I mean, that's an incredible pace as well. It's been a goal scoring bonanza for some of the best goal scorers in the NHL. The question I have for you guys, does Kyle Connor deserve to be spoken about in the same breath as the best goal scorers in the league?
Yeah, he's got 36 goals. You just mentioned it. He's sixth. I don't know. I mean, if you can say that, you know, he's one of the best goal scorers, you know, of the last, you know, 5 years or something like that, because even though he's had 3 30 goal seasons now, he's never, you know, pushed up into 45 plus territory with guys like Ovechkin, right? But he's absolutely one of the best goal scorers in the game right now. And, you know, we talked about it. He's easily going to hit 40. I mean, he might even inch towards 45. And, you know, he's only 22, 23 years old.
I mean, there's no reason why. I mean, it's funny how a lot of the most recent articles have been about Kyle Connor kind of blossoming or hitting his stride. And it's like, have you been watching Kyle Connor his entire career? That's all the kid has done since he played for the University of Michigan. That's what he was. He was a goal scorer. You know, and when he went to the Moose in the AHL when the Jets sent him down, I think he had like 2 or 3 goals in his first like 25 games, and then he scored 19 and 21. Like, he took a little bit of time to figure it out at the pro level, which is not unheard of, and then he started to produce. And he's just even Steven. Every year, you can count on him, 35 goals, 35 assists, or, you know, in that realm, you know, somewhere in the 60 to 70 point. Now he's hitting 70 points for the first time.
It's going to be a little 40-40 this year.
No, but and there's no reason to think that that's not, and it, you know, someone was asking me, is he a 50-goal scorer this year? I said, I don't think he's going to be 50 this year, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Kyle Connor will be a 50-goal scorer in the next year or two. So, I mean, I think he has a talent. I mean, he's an all-world offensive player. There's no question about it.
It's just crazy that we're talking about, you know, Connor and whether or not he's going to hit 50 goals, when all of the talk before the season was if Laine is going to get close to 50 goals. And, you know, quietly, you know, he's approaching 30. What is he at?
27. Sorry, yeah, I was looking at
Line is 27.
Yeah, so he's close to 30. I mean, he's easily going to hit 30, or I should say he should hit 30. And, you know, we know that he's rounded out his overall game, right? He's become a better defensive player, and we knew that the playmaking element of his game was underrated going back a couple of years ago. So obviously nobody's complaining, you know, that Line is not going to be a 40-goal guy this year, but it's inevitable to me that Line is going to one day score 50.
I think as he continues to figure it out and as he continues to grow into his body, his goal scoring, which, you know, at its floor seems to be about 30 goals a year. You still don't know what his ceiling is. And I think that's what's most fascinating for Jets fans, that they could potentially have two guys in Line A and Connor who could be responsible for be upwards of 90 goals a season between the two of them.
Yeah, 90 to 100 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And when you have two players like that you can rely on to score to that effect, never mind Ehlers and Wheeler and Scheifele and everybody else that you know is talented on this team, that goes a long way for what should be a team's success. Time will tell, of course. Now, quick reminder, Ezzy, before we go to break, who has Dreisaitl, Pasternak, and Zibanejad on their fantasy hockey team?
No, absolutely you. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, there's nothing I can say. Like, you nailed it.
Can you
this
write
year.
Me the check for winning your pool already, or are you going to wait till the end of the year?
No, you nailed it. I mean, you've won it.
Thank you. Praise to me. Praise be to me. When we come back, we're going to talk about how NHL teams go around and hire coaches. Is there too much groupthink? Is there too much reliance on the quote-unquote retread head coaches? talk about an interesting article that was on ESPN.com up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
John Hines is a great leader. He has a great track record of both effectively developing younger players and successfully motivating veteran players. He's certainly young in comparison to me, and as a young, I feel, up-and-coming and very bright coach, and we are confident that he is the guy to cultivate a winning culture in our locker room.
That was Nashville Predators head coach David Poile announcing the hiring of John Hines as new Predators head coach after they dismissed Peter Laviolette earlier this season. Things haven't gone so well with the Preds and Hines behind the bench. He did not give them the bounce back that they were hoping for. They're still in the thick of things in the Western Conference, certainly, but John Hines has certainly not been a difference maker behind the bench. You know, when he was hired, it was an interesting hire, of course, from the outset, in that, you know, he had just been dismissed not that long ago by the New Jersey Devils. Immediately catches on with the Preds. You saw it in Vegas. They got rid of Gerard Gallant, immediately hired Peter DeBoer, who'd been fired in San Jose earlier this year. The NHL head coaching population just seems to be, you know, switching from coach to coach, team to team. And there's a lot of thought now. There was an interesting article on ESPN.com that says the NHL, more than any other sport, is too reluctant to hire new head coaches. That more than any other sport, NHL hires are previous head coaches. 60% of NHL coaching hires in the past 15 years have previous head coaching experience. Compare that to the NBA, which is close at 58%, the NFL 36%, and Major League Baseball 45%. Does the NHL, gentlemen, hire retread head coaches too often and not potentially look for new up-and-coming head coaches enough?
Yeah, most likely. And you just mentioned John Hines is hired by David Poile in Nashville after he's fired by Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey. Well, actually, it was Ray Shiro at the time, then Ray Shiro was let go. But, I mean, the numbers confirm that, right? Like, there's no doubt that there still is a bit of an old boys club in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it happens in the NFL. It happens in Major League Baseball, happens in NBA, but it definitely happens more in the NHL. And Rickard Gronberg is a guy that we had on the show last summer, right?
Right.
And he's a guy that everybody has kind of viewed as the next up-and-coming, you know, mind in the NHL.
So let me tell people who Rickard Gronberg are, if you don't remember. Rickard Gronberg has been the longtime head coach of the Swedish national team, national men's hockey team. He's well thought of as a head coach. And in this article, which is on ESPN.com, and maybe I'll tweet out a link to it, it talks about how Gronberg can't get a shot behind an NHL bench.
He's coaching in the Swiss League now.
Coaching in the Zurich. Swiss League, yeah. He can't get a job, even as an associate coach, or as he's willing to take a job as an assistant coach. But for whatever reason, Rickard Gronberg, who is obviously good enough to coach Team Sweden to a lot of success on the international stage,
right,
cannot get a job in the NHL. And the agent that is quoted in this, who has a lot of coaches as clients, Neil Glasberg, says that the NHL is too set in its ways. It's too reliant on the old boys club rather than thinking outside the box to finding somebody who's got potentially new ideas.
Of course, but it's been like that forever. I mean, it's sad, but it's true. I mean, how often do we see change in the NHL? Whether it's general managers, whether it's head coaches. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's a very groupthink type of situation, and yeah, there really isn't a lot of changeover, and you don't see, you know, the guys, them go to the college ranks too often, or, you know, generally, like you said, Drew, it's you know, occasionally the AHL coach will get a call up, you know, when the NHL coach gets fired mid-season, usually gives him a bit of an opportunity to kind of see what he's like, what he's able to do, and then sometimes they'll give him a look the next year or not. But no, unfortunately, it's too often. But it's not. I don't think it's just head coaches. I think it's everywhere. I think it's
Head coaches usually bring in assistant coaches that they know will support their decisions, rather than assistant coaches who might challenge them, not on a negative sense of the word, but challenge their thinking,
sure,
to maybe better themselves.
I'm just saying, like, just overall. I just say, if you look at general managers, assistant general managers, again, a lot of that is from the hockey class.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of new blood. There's not a lot of outside ideas. And it really is a shame, in the sense that there are some people who, if given the opportunity, would do so many good things to organizations. But the problem is that organizations have a tendency to not want to make waves. And so you continue down the path that is already kind of presented in front of you. And they don't like to make these radical changes. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, there are a lot of good minds in hockey that aren't necessarily in the roles that they should be in. And if they were given those opportunities, you got to think that they would be able to provide organizations with success. So it takes organizations, it takes the owners, and it really is the owner. And this actually is almost to me the craziest part of the business of hockey, is that you're the owner of the product. Mm-hmm. It's you who makes the decision, but you tend to default to the general manager. I'm not saying ultimately you're not the one who's pulling the trigger, but generally you're seen as a guy who's not from that realm. You're not a hockey guy. So you trust the people within that framework to make those decisions, and they are from a certain way. So we see with Dundon, for example, in Carolina, he's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, for the most part, they kind of default to the GMs to make the decisions. But the truth is, it's you've had a lot of success in some realm by not necessarily
conforming
and sticking to the norm. So maybe taking that wisdom and bringing it into the NHL realm, from what we've seen, and we're seeing a little bit with Seattle. Seattle, perhaps not necessarily with, they've conformed in the sense they got Ron Francis and they've got some, but you know, they've got Cami Granato. They've hired another
an analytics hire.
I can't remember her name, but I'm just saying, so maybe they're changing it a little bit, but I'm just saying that the NHL is very slow to adopt new. I don't care if it's just coaches. I think it's across the board. And I think it's a shame because I think what they miss out on is new ideas and new ways of doing things. And I think it would be to their benefit long-term.
Here's the quote from Neil Glasberg. He's one of the NHL's most prominent coaching agents. Instead, most NHL teams have this hire a friend mentality. I hear this from guys all the time. It's not the best candidate that gets hired. It's the candidate with the best network or who is the best known. That's not how you build success. No company would ever be successful if they were just hiring people they knew. There's a lot of truth in that statement.
100%.
Yeah, and you know, Dave mentioned earlier, you know, NHL general managers don't want to make radical changes, right? And to me, hiring Rikard Gronberg is not a radical change.
Oh, I agree with that.
That's just hiring a good coach who's had a lot of success with the Swedish national team, right? Like, you ask people in the hockey world, and you know, Darren Dreger had him on the Dreger Cafe. Like, he's been kind of, you know, tapped as that, you know, future head coach. And, you know, maybe it happens sooner rather than later, but, you know, a guy that, you know, comes to mind as far as, you know, coaches that have, you know, earned their dues in the AHL, Sheldon Keefe, right? Jay Leach is another guy with Providence, Dave. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had a lot of success with Providence. He's been an NHL assistant. A lot of people think that Jay Leach is one day going to be an NHL head coach. So it's kind of, you know, for the last, like, couple of decades at least, maybe even going back further, it's kind of been like, you know, you pay your dues in the AHL. You know, Bruce Boudreau is another guy. I mean, Claude Noel. There's so many guys that have had success in the American Hockey League, then graduate to the NHL, maybe as an assistant first. But the point is, if you've been a good coach in the Swiss League, in the Swedish League, in the Finnish League, why can't you get a job as a head coach in the NHL? There's no reason. I mean, if you, it's based on merit. If you're an excellent coach and a general manager and an owner think you can take your team to that next level, and you know, another coach that comes outside of the box is Ralph Kruger. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, like, Ralph Kruger was, you know, out in, you know, in involved in England with the Premier League, and you know, so that was a little bit of an out of the box hire by Jason Botterill in Buffalo, and obviously Buffalo's not going to make the playoffs. But Ralph Kruger's a very well-respected hockey mind, hockey coach, so that was more outside of the box. So we've seen it a little bit. But yeah, when you're talking about Nashville, you're talking about, you know, New Jersey, you're talking about Vegas hiring Pete DeBoer, who was let go by San Jose, like, do we think Bruce Boudreau's going to be out of work long?
No. You know, there's certain coaches that, you know, you hire because they're really good coaches.
Mm-hmm.
That might be retreads. And then there's certain coaches that get hired as retreads that you know their ceiling.
Right.
You know their ceiling is average, maybe average plus on some occasions, but these guys constantly seem to be getting work. I mean, you know, no disrespect to John Hines, but at any point in time, did you think that he needed to be scooped up immediately?
Well, and the other thing I was going to say is, you know, you go back to, you know, when Dave Hakstol Sure. Was, you know, we've had him on the show before. He was hired by Philadelphia. Even hiring a coach from the NCAA, like David Quinn, Jim Montgomery. Remember we were talking about this, you know, a few years ago, like he's got no NHL head coaching experience, but he's had all the success in NCAA. And then like another guy like Scott Sandlin, University of Minnesota Duluth, like he's been talked about as a guy that, you know, maybe he'll get a job in the NHL one day. But even that is kind of considered
revolutionary.
A little bit out of the box that you're going to hire a guy out of college hockey as opposed to a guy that's come from the American Hockey League, the minors, right? So
now I'll tell you why
there needs to be, you know, there needs to be that shift in thinking.
I think there is a little bit of a difference in hiring a college kid, because generally how you communicate and how you coach a college kid or a younger player is different than how you can coach a professional hockey player playing at the NHL or the AHL level. Just the certain methods of communication you can get away with at the college level that you might not be able to get away with at the NHL level.
I mean, paycheck, where players are getting paychecks versus the ones who aren't.
Right. And so you just have to tailor your communication style to your audience, which is incumbent on any head coach to do. You can't necessarily use the same techniques and the same messaging at every level of hockey. But if you can coach, and if you're a successful hockey coach at the NHL, at the college level, I think it makes a lot of sense that you're going to, you know, you deserve an opportunity to see if you're going to be a successful coach at the NHL level rather than a guy who's just always been, you know, even Steven or average at the NHL level on his third or his fourth or his fifth job.
No, absolutely. That's my point. And David Quinn, I mean, yes. I think if the Rangers make the playoffs, and that's what we always say this time of year, when it comes to the Jack Adams Trophy, a team has to make the playoffs in order to be a Jack Adams favorite, which if you think about it is ridiculous.
Sure.
Like as far as I'm considered, you know, when you talk about Artemi Panarin, even if the Rangers don't make the playoffs, should he not be a Hart Trophy finalist? Like he's had an incredible year. Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm saying.
The line of demarcation in the NHL seems to be making the playoffs.
Right, and Jim Montgomery as well. Before he was let go, I mean, he was doing a pretty good job with Dallas.
And then he seemed to have other outside hockey issues that he has to resolve, and hopefully he does. And it'll be interesting to see if he gets another opportunity as an NHL head coach, or if he's a one and done, as the NCAA basketball expression goes. Before we go to break, we want to make mention that we're proud to sponsor the 48th annual Ken Cronson Rady JCC Sports Dinner coming up on Tuesday, May the 12th. The keynote speaker of that fantastic event, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. Tickets available right now. Pardon me, at RadyJCC.com. It's one of the preeminent dinners on the calendar, on the social calendar in Winnipeg. As I'm losing my voice, as I'm trying to get this out.
Some water here.
Seriously, I'm choking here. Anyways, we're proud sponsors of the Rady JCC 48th annual dinner. Tickets available at RadyJCC.com. When we come back, Travis Yost from TSN and TSN.ca is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Remember, Manitoba Moose Hockey coming up later on the station today and tomorrow ahead of the Jets and the Coyotes coming up on Monday, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We're pleased to welcome to the program from TSN.ca, Travis Yost joins us on the line. Travis, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. How's the guys going?
Doing very well, Travis. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, that's all you can sometimes hope for, isn't it? Travis, obviously we brought you on to take a look around the NHL. And, you know, back in hour number one, we were talking about this because the Jets defeated the Vegas Golden Knights by a 4-0 margin last night. And I expressed surprise that the Golden Knights went with Marc-Andre Fleury in net. And I know he's been playing some decent hockey as of late. But Robin Lehner had some great success against the Jets earlier this year, a 2-0-1 record when he was a member of the Blackhawks, and, you know, save percentages upwards of 970 in one game and I believe 980 in the other game. You know, from your perspective, for the Vegas Golden Knights, a team that seems to have all that it could want in terms of being a potential Western Conference champion, who would be your goaltender of record there? Would it be Marc-Andre Fleury, or would you run with Robin Lehner, who they acquired from the Blackhawks?
This to me is the most fascinating move that a team made at the deadline for a variety of reasons. My short answer is Robin Lehner, by the way, but the longer answer, go back to the trade deadline. Vegas No high-end team has given up more merely from the goaltending position than Vegas this year, at least when you talk about true potential conference finalists or Stanley Cup contenders. Fleury's been slightly below average, and Malcolm Subban was a train wreck. And the team did not address it, right? And I think Vegas was looking at their roster and saying, hey, look, we got maybe the second best skating group in the league. The goaltending is killing us. So they didn't identify the issue properly, the backup issue, at the start of the season. And what did they do? They didn't go out and get a good backup at the trade deadline. They went out and got a starting goalie. I don't know how many people have followed Robin Leonard's play over the last three seasons. He is a top 12 goalie in the league. That is just a fact at this point. 930 goalie, had an unbelievable, return year in Chicago, returned out with a 918. I think he's at 968 over a pair of games in Vegas. He's indisputably better than Fleury is at this point of his career. I thought it was fascinating, though, because Leonard's on an expiring. They can't pay Leonard, but they're now staring down the barrel. It's almost like they invited a goaltending controversy, which isn't always a bad thing. But when they traded for Robin Leonard, they had to have known the caliber and quality of the goalie they're bringing in. And this is not the regular season where you could say, okay, Fleury's going to play 40 games, Leonard's going to play 40 games, and we're going to fill in two starts elsewhere. The playoffs are a different animal. A starter is a starter. And you don't have back-to-back games. Really, the only time you drive a guy out of the net is bad performance or injury. And I think, it's taken 2 weeks. But after last night's game, I mean, Fleury just constantly looks out of position right now. And we've seen this from him at points of his career. That's literally the opposite of what Robin Leonard is, right? He's so big, he can cover so much of the net, and he is agile on top of it. It almost seems like Vegas kind of invited this. And if you look at that from that perspective, it's two questions, right? You hit the first one on the head, which is, who's going to be the guy come playoff time? I genuinely believe they'll probably start Fleury, but I imagine he's going to have a very short leash. The second question, the one with bigger ramifications, is what does this team do going forward? Like, do they want to keep Leonard? Because if they keep Leonard, then that means they're either committing $13, $14 million to the goaltending position, which is not going to happen, or they're going to move Fleury in some way, shape, or form. To me, easily the most interesting situation in the league right now.
And Travis, why I thought your article was so interesting is because when you talk about who's going to be the number one goaltender come playoff time, and you talk about goals saved above average in the article, and we've talked a lot about that this year when it comes to Connor Hellebuck. When it comes to teams like Boston, Tuukka Rask is going to be the game one starter. When it comes to teams like Tampa Bay, that Andre Vasilevsky is going to be the game one starter. But in addition to Vegas and whether or not it's going to be Marc-Andre Fleury or Robin Leonard, there's a bunch of teams where you don't know who's going to be the number one starter. You look at Colorado even, Philip Grubauer is injured right now. Pavel Francouz has been really good. And then you go down to teams like Nashville where it looks like UC Saros is probably going to be your game one starter if they do, of course, get into the playoffs. But David Riddick, Cam Talbot, I mean, you can go on and on. Have we ever seen a year like this when there are so many teams where you don't know who really the number one starter is?
It's not only that. I'm fascinated by it. It's not just we don't know who the starter is. In many cases, the backup is materially outplaying the starter over a fairly considerable number of games. And we mentioned the Vegas example. Just take Leonard's 30-odd starts with Chicago and Vegas and look at him against Fleury. Well, yes, on the depth chart, Fleury is the number one, but the team is staring down the barrel of the reality of their backup is probably better. We've got tandem issues in Arizona, Columbus, Colorado. We've got our backup is better than our starter questions now manifesting in places like Vegas. I think there's a Colorado. There's about a 6 or 7 game split between 1A and 1B in Colorado, but Franchot has been the better of the two there. And how about the Rangers, right? Like, the Rangers are like one of the funner stories in the league. You've got, three goalies there that seem capable. And maybe the best goalie is the guy that's third on the depth chart, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe the best, maybe the worst of the three options is maybe the best goalie we've seen since Dominic Hasek and Henrik Lundqvist, right? And if the Rangers, who were at like 41% playoff odds just a couple days ago, if they get in, is it Henrik Lundqvist game one? Like that, again, we know how teams tend to operate. I think it's going to be a Lundqvist in game one, but you just start seeing, like, the leash is tightening on a lot of these guys, and teams like the Rangers have to be looking down their depth chart and saying, okay, we need to win right now. Who is the best option for that? There are, and I think you nailed it earlier, there's only like four or five teams where it's like, yeah, that's my guy, right? Tuukka Rask, Ben Bishop, Andrei Vasilevsky. You can even make Winnipeg for sure as well, but you could make the argument, look in Toronto, for example. Freddie Anderson's had a really down year, and they bring in Jack Campbell, who has struggled at parts in his career, and he's looked pretty good in Toronto. And now you've got that wrinkle, right? You can see kind of game one, Tampa Bay goes out, you know, wins 6-3 against Toronto. Freddie Anderson gives up 6-28. There's going to be questions in the majority of these markets in round one. And maybe it's just me, but I don't remember anything like this.
Well, you know, Travis, talking, you go from muddled creases to clear-cut creases, and you touched on Connor Hellebuck just now, and there's no question who's the number one goaltender in Winnipeg, 56 games already. He's got about almost a 20 goal saved above expectation. Two-parter. Number one is, do you see him as the Vezina winner, and how many games is too many? Because there's a lot of talk right now, with the Jets having 13 games left, that he may play, probably with the exception of the back-to-back next weekend, almost every game left. So is that too many games? And then there you go.
Well, number one, yes, he's my Vezina favorite. I think Connor Hellebuck, I think there's, again, we can go all day long about this. And most goaltenders, the best goaltender in any given season is probably the heart as well, unless mm-hmm. you have some outrageous season. That's how good Connor Hellebuck's been. Winnipeg makes the playoffs, it is going to be almost entirely on the back of a goaltender who has been an eraser for a shaky blue line. That seems even still complimentary. shaky blue line. Like, he's the ultimate eraser, right? And he has been all year, and this is now year two of him being this good. You know, he's got the longest leash possibly in the entire league. They're going to keep running him out. I think it's an interesting decision point for Winnipeg, because I think we know that if you kind of look at league trends, the workhorse starter, it just doesn't exist anymore, right? The guy's mm-hmm. playing 70 games in a year, 68, 70 games year over year has dropped off emphatically. And when we do see guys get that type of run, we tend to see performance regression or injuries, you know, kind of cluster around them in future periods. You know, so Winnipeg knows that's a risk, but here's another risk. How many games can Winnipeg really afford to not play Hellebuck down the stretch here? I mean, they're as good as they looked yesterday. Their playoff disposition is very, very uncomfortable right now, and it's just been like that way most of the season. I think the team is flawed, but they have this unbelievable, you know, advantage over more or less every team in the league, say maybe Boston and, I don't know, Dallas perhaps, where their goaltending advantage is sizable. And I'm sympathetic to that. Winnipeg right now, they've got to keep rolling Hellebuck out as much as possible, because I just don't – that is their advantage. And if you remove him from the equation, I think in part you're either putting a lot of burden on a skating group that hasn't shown us a whole lot this year, or you're accepting that a missing the postseason is a, you know, an acceptable outcome. And I just cannot for the life of me think the coaching staff or the front office is going to go with it. So we're going to see a lot of Hellebuck. There is risk associated with it, but there's just as much risk without it.
Travis Yost is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You know, Travis, the Minnesota Wild to me are fascinating. They're a team that fired Bruce Boudreau, and most people thought that, you know, they were done for the year. They almost traded Zach Parise at the deadline, and now they are sitting, you know, a point out of the playoffs in the Western Conference, albeit a weaker Western Conference. You wrote about this, you know, I believe it was last month. You know, how much truth is there in the idea that you get a boost when you dismiss a head coach and hire a new head coach versus the phrase, the dead cat bounce that teams sometimes get?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of a paradox isn't the right word, but what tends to happen in this league, and I think this was the theme this year and has been true for about 4 or 5 years, mid-season coaching firings that are on ice related generally are because the goaltending stinks, right? You have a bad goaltender, your coach is going to get fired. Now, in some cases, there's other issues with the team, right? What we've seen teams have bad goaltending, and they're just fatally flawed top to bottom, and the coach wears a bullet for himself, the players, the general manager who assembled it, and so on and so on. But think about the number of coaches that were fired this year. Bruce Boudreau is a great example. There's not a person on the planet who doesn't think Bruce Boudreau is a good coach. But for whatever reason, Devin Dubnyk and the Minnesota goaltending, which have been so good for a few years, completely cratered. And then Boudreau was fired. And then guess what happened as soon as Boudreau was fired? Goaltending performance started to regress towards league norms and team norms, and now Minnesota's back in the playoff hunt. So it's almost like I do believe from a human factor standpoint that especially, you know, and this is where the skill of a GM comes in, reading the room. Players, you know, this is what leadership is, right? Players want to play for a guy that they like and respect, and if there's a new face and you're trying to make a good impression, you're going to play a little bit harder. That's reality. That's every industry in the world. But in many cases in hockey, it seems as like teams react to, oh, goaltending is down. It's the coach's fault, regardless if it is true or not. We get rid of the coach. And then as goaltending tends to come around just through normal performance and true talent over longer samples from whatever goaltender you have in net, then it becomes, oh, you know, the coach fixed the team, right? And so much of it seems to be timing rather than, you know, whether a new coach really can just come in and be a soothsayer for goaltending performance. So I think that's something that I think we all should be cognizant of is, you know, how much, you know, what are the coaches contributing towards team output, and where are the coaches maybe benefiting or not benefiting from? I don't like using the word randomness, but I think that's a fair word to use here when you have just goaltending crater and such, you know, over just a few weeks of play.
Travis Yost covers the NHL for TSN.ca. Travis, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Appreciate it, Travis. When we come back, we recap the NHL general managers meetings, which happened earlier in the week, and look around the NHL as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think even more interestingly is Bill Daly revealing that in talks with the NHLPA during these CBA sessions, they've talked about having a multi-year salary cap locked in, which would really help teams plan out in terms of long-term deals and everything else. So if that indeed is the case, you could see that happening as soon as perhaps 2 years from now.
TSN hockey insider Pierre LeBrun talking about one of the most interesting takeaways from the general managers meetings that were a little bit sleepy this time.
Is there anything really interesting?
Not a ton. It was a quiet general managers meetings. But I mean, I love that in the NHL in this day and age, it's revolutionary that perhaps they allow teams to plan for their salary caps by giving them multiple years numbers at a time. So that, you know, wasn't it almost after the draft last year?
It was very late.
It was like almost like an hour before free agency was going to begin is when they came out with the number.
You're right. It was very, very, made no sense.
Yeah. I mean, just figure out a way. It shouldn't be that difficult to
have accountants
to give teams, you know, 2 years worth of numbers. And then, you know, if you have to go back and fix it afterwards, you know, again, I love the talk about escrow. And sure, I wouldn't want, you know, people garnishing any money that's on my paycheck, but my paycheck's a lot smaller than the paychecks.
I already insult the government.
That's true.
Speak for yourself, Drew.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying it's like, you know, escrow, such a big deal. But I mean, you know, is escrow really that big of a deal when you're making $10 million a year?
Mo escrow, mo problems.
In any event, that was one of the big takeaways from the NHL general managers meetings. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment this Saturday morning. Reminder, you got Moose Hockey today and tomorrow here on this station, leading into Monday's another must-win game for the Winnipeg Jets against the Arizona Coyotes.
It's the gender equality game. We should mention that.
I would say
for the Moose.
Yeah.
Yes, it was last night as well. For the Jets did a great job.
These are must-win games for the Moose as well.
But I'll be honest, I sort of have my attention to the Moose has slipped a little bit.
They're last in the Central.
Do they have a chance?
Well, I mean, they're 7 points
out. You're saying there's still a chance.
They're 7 points back of San Antonio, I believe, unless it changed last night. But they're not. They won both games last week against Chicago in overtime, which isn't great because, of course, you don't want to give up points to teams that are ahead of you.
Yeah, 3 points.
It's Rockford now. So they're 8 points back of Rockford.
So they're up against it.
They're up against it. Yeah. I mean, I was 26 points ahead of them right now in the standings. I was one of the Minnesota Wild farm club there. They, along with the Milwaukee Admirals, who are the Nashville farm club, have been the two elite teams in the Central almost all season long. So they've been very good. And the Moose are up against it. It's going to be very tough for them to really be able to do anything, but you never know.
one of the interesting things I saw, this came from our friend Frank Saravelli, the quote-unquote silver-haired millennial, talking about how the NHL is introducing a new puck for the start of playoffs. It's going to have all that tracking, you know, features where you can see how fast a player is skating.
A $3 puck versus the $400 puck that they're right. going over the boards for.
Well, the best part is that Gary Bettman announced that teams have been playing with it and they didn't know about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said there were some teams, I think like six teams or something like that.
Oh, interesting that they sort of snuck it in there to see if the players would notice. Because if you read, apparently Sidney Crosby was quick to notice that the edges of the puck felt different. Which, I mean, granted, it strikes me as a very insignificant
Maybe not if you're shooting, though.
But, I mean, if you're a player, it's just bizarre to me that you would introduce it for the start of the playoffs.
Yeah.
If the puck is even the least bit different than it is during the regular season.
More importantly, and I was talking about this at the arena.
It was with me.
With you.
Yeah.
Does anybody actually care how fast a player is going?
I don't know. I mean, it's
like, do you really need to know that Connor McDavid is fast? I'm pretty sure he's fast. Nikolaj Ehlers? Pretty sure he's fast. I don't need to know he's going 30 kilometers, or if they're going to do miles. I don't know what they're going to use.
I'm sure they're going to use miles.
It's... So do I really care? I mean, obviously there's going to be other advantages, you would think, you would hope, more than player speed. Because if it's really just to like quantify how fast a player is going, I mean, I'm sorry.
No,
I couldn't care less.
And the point you're trying to make is it going to be data overload, right? Because I think there's a lot of fans out there that love the advanced stats, and it's going to be interesting to see how the NHL presents it on their website and on their app and how the networks incorporate that into their broadcast, right? Because you don't want to be inundated. You still want to be able to watch the game. So that's, to me, what I think is going to be the most interesting.
When, not that you necessarily watch the All-Star game, because I don't, but they do sort of feature some of that stuff during the All-Star game broadcast. Doesn't really bring anything to my viewing experience.
Right.
To your point, Dave.
Yeah.
Nothing about it's make, oh, wow. Like,
I mean, again, if it's, to Ezzie's point, if there's additional information it's providing that we're not aware of, like in terms of analytics, then I'm all for it. But like to know how fast a player is going, I'm sorry, that's so irrelevant.
That's it for the Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Travis Yost, Jody Shelley, Craig Morgan, and Mike McIntyre. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and the 48th Annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.